Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future, living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome to the show here on another Friday afternoon. Some show notes for you if you are looking for wrestling. Tonight, WCWO, like usual, at the Outlaw Arena in Indianapolis, Indiana. WTF in Carmel, Indiana. Freelance Wrestling in Chicago, Illinois. GPW in Goshen, Illinois. FGW in Hamilton, Ohio. Tomorrow night, Eclipse Wrestling in Altoona, Pennsylvania. There is a pro wrestling benefit show happening in Rogersville, Tennessee. Backbreakers Entertainment in Mayfield, Pennsylvania. NSW in Moulton, Alabama. TSW in Corbin, Kentucky. RSW in Buckhannon, West Virginia. And MLW happening tomorrow in Chicago, Illinois. And I believe our guest is with us, so I want to bring him on right away. Do we have Cassidy Keith with us?
Yes, sir.
Well, I want to thank you for taking time today to be with us. We appreciate that. And starting off, since it's your first time with us, could you answer our traditional first-timers question, what got you into the business of professional wrestling?
Man, I've always been in love with wrestling in general. It was just my first memory in life was really wrestling, like cowering in fear under The Undertaker when he was cutting the promo. I did, you know, like high school and collegiate wrestling, and I was contacted by a guy that I no longer speak to, as most wrestling goes, and we kind of just fell into it. I've been doing it for a while, ever since.
You are referred to as the B.I.G. of the 313. Can you tell a little bit about what that represents for you?
Yeah, you know, it's something that that I guess you could say just it means a lot to me as far as, you know, monikers are concerned, because there's this stigma about, you know, like bigger wrestlers and just that. You know, they're very one-dimensional. They're, you know, big hoo-ha guys. They do two big spots and then they go home because they're exhausted. And one thing that I wanted to do is to kind of change the game as far as that's concerned. And the B.I.G. part, you know, comes from Biggie Smalls and, like, you know, Notorious B.I.G. and basically 313, the area code of Detroit. So.
You wrestle in the Michigan area pretty regularly for several independents. Michigan has always been sort of a hotbed for independent wrestling. It came out of the Sheik's territory, of course. Wrestling was very big in the Sheik's prime. And WrestleMania III, of course, was held in Pontiac, Michigan. It was, for many, many years, the largest attended wrestling event in history. And here in modern days, you see a lot of independent groups all over Michigan, a lot of people coming out of there doing very well on the national scene as well. What do you think it is about Michigan that has always made it a hotbed for pro wrestling?
Well, you know, I think with it just being such easy access to where, you know, all the other places, you know, like they say, Detroit hustles harder. So we just kind of, We go for what we need, and we work as hard as possible, man. So it's just with us being as close as we are to, you know, technically from where I am in Detroit, it's quicker for me to get to Canada than it is Toledo. So just with us being so close to so many different good places for wrestling, all that kind of like melts together.
We had you previously scheduled several weeks ago on the program, and you were unable to make it due to the bad phone connection. You were actually in Jamaica at that point in time for professional wrestling. Can you tell us a little bit how you came to be booked in the Caribbean and what that experience was like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. And once again, I do apologize for that. Just we were not expecting the quality of the call to be that horrible in Jamaica. But, you know, everything happens for a reason, and I'm glad I'm with you guys today. But, you know, it was pretty cool. I was contacted by the promoter, Robert there, and he really wanted us to come out and do what we do, you know. So it was a really humbling experience being able to see the real Jamaica, you know. Everybody sees that the touristy side, you know, with the resorts and all of that, and a lot of people don't get to see that, you know, the real Jamaica, and that's pretty much where we were. We're in this remote part of the mountain, and we definitely got to quote unquote rough it, but the love that we got from the fans was crazy. You know, there's only one wrestling company in the entire island, so being able to represent Detroit and do that was pretty cool.
Now, were you someone that kind of studied what was happening in different parts of the world as far as wrestling goes, like the Caribbean or in Asia, the Middle East, anything like that? Were you looking to get out of the United States, or was it something that came into your lap and you didn't necessarily have a frame of reference for what wrestling was doing in other parts of the country or other parts of the world?
A little bit of both. We're definitely looking to, you know, branch out, and the next year we're hoping to get some more international bookings and just the spirit of Detroit in general. And this one has just kind of spearheaded the journey, I guess you could say. So we try to keep as up to date with the international scene as much as possible, but be totally transparent, it's so much wrestling out there that it's almost impossible to follow everything. So we try to keep our finger on the button.
One of the other things that has been going on in your career for the last few years, I believe you kind of touched on it, you have gotten into much better shape in recent years than the early part of your career. You've trimmed down quite a bit. You're much more agile in the ring. Can you take us through what the thought process was when you decided to get into better shape and start the weight loss journey?
Yeah. Honestly, it was my daughter. She's the one who got me wanting to do better for myself. She just turned 11 in May, and she was like 9 at the time, and I was really sluggish, and, you know, for being a big guy, I was working, no problem, but, you know, I wasn't working to the best of my potential. I knew I could do better, and I just got tired of just living like that. I was almost 500 pounds before I started losing the weight, and currently I'm about 337, so I've been working pretty hard with it, and, you know, once again, transparency. I could always work harder, but it's a progress. Progress is a slow process, so we're getting there.
Now, for the listeners out there that might be struggling with issues regarding the weight or conditioning or things of that nature, can you take us through what has worked for you and what has not worked for you in your particular journey that might be of help to the listeners?
Yeah, absolutely. So what I ended up doing was at the end of technically the beginning of the journey, I ended up going through a bunch of different diets. I did all the fads and it wasn't working. I did do the I don't know if it's keto or keto. I tried that. It worked for a minute, but it's not something that consistently, it's really hard to maintain. What I ended up doing was I did bariatric surgery, which I am 100% behind. You know, it's not the easy way out like some people would think it is. It's actually just the beginning because it's fully invasive surgery. You know, there is a risk of death. And not on, it's a very small one these days, but, you know, it doesn't just drop your weight overnight. You know, it's a good start. It's a catalyst to get you going. So once you get the surgery, that's when you got to keep going and you need to go harder. Because now your stomach is the size of a small apple. Your esophagus can hold nothing bigger than an M&M. And, you know, it's a learning curve. You have to learn how to eat again. You have to learn how to exercise again. The weight's going to start falling off, but it's only going to fall off when you want to work. So for anybody who's listening and who's considering it, you know, you can always hit me up. I am constantly giving as much information about it as possible. And it's, you know, it's once again, it's not an easy way out. It's a lot of hard work, but it definitely was the best thing that ever happened to me physically.
On the flip side of that, everyone that is in professional wrestling knows that eventually there's going to be some injuries involved. It's just part of the wrestling business. Injuries happen, be it minor ones or severe ones. What are some of the injuries that you thus far have had to overcome?
Well, I've been pretty blessed. I haven't had too many severe injuries. I think my biggest thing is, like, I did get gout because of wrestling, which is not fun. But, like, you know, my feet are just horrible now. But so I have to pay attention to what I do, how often I walk, what I eat, you know. But, like, as far as, like, full-blown injuries, I've blown out my knee a couple of times. I think my knees will just be, like, the biggest thing, you know, especially just being a bigger guy, you know. A lot of weight on it in the first place. But, you know, everybody's got a concussion every blue moon. But I've been pretty blessed. I don't think I've broken any bones, actually.
Always a good thing to not break a bone.
Yeah.
Now, part of the reason that some wrestlers become injured is due to the condition of the actual ring itself on the independent circuit. Rings can vary from really, really good, high-quality rings down to some absolute death traps. What would you say is the best ring in which you've wrestled?
I think I was in, like, Bay City, Michigan or something like that. We wrestled on what was – it was a former WWF ring, so it was 20 by 20, really big, really spacious. And it was beautiful. Like, it, you know, it was stiff, but it was good enough that, you know, it made all those classic noises that we all grew up on listening, right?
Now, is there ever an occasion where you go to a show and you see the conditions of the ring and you decide you're not going to step foot in that just due to your own personal safety and the safety of everyone else on the show?
Well, I don't think I've ever had that. I have had some instances where we walked in and, you know, the ring was in horrible disarray, but, you know, you got to be professional. So, like, it's not really something that's like, oh, I'm not going to wrestle in the ring. Just kind of you get a feel for what's works and what doesn't, you know, kind of walk around the ring, work around the ring, see where the weak spots are and just avoid them.
And hopefully you don't find them once you're bumping. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of wrestlers I have noticed in my own career have some very unique rituals involving tape. A lot of guys will apply their tape in a certain way every time. Some of them start with one specific body part before going to the next one. Some of them will write things on their tape. Do you have any tape rituals of your own?
You know, when I do use tape, I don't use it often because it's just, I'm a really hairy person. And it's just not a good time. But when I do use it, depending on what's going on in life, we usually write some sort of message on the tape, you know, depending on what's going on. Like if somebody needs a prayer, we'll put their name on the tape or something like that.
One of the companies I know that you have wrestled for is Pro Wrestling King. They operate in the Michigan and Indiana area in the Midwest. They've been a rising, growing company for quite some time. What are your impressions of that particular company?
I love the owner. Eric's a great guy. We haven't been there for a while, only just because we kind of, I think we were there for the most part in 2017, and we were champions the entire year, and it was kind of like we kind of went through the whole division, so we wanted to give it a break and let the division build back up and then see where the future takes. But a lot of great people started from that company, and hopefully, you know, I wish them nothing but the best.
Now, obviously, like we said, you had gone to Jamaica to wrestle, which is something that not a lot of current independent wrestlers can put on their resume. Are there other countries out there that are on your radar that you would like to get to and cross that off a career bucket list?
Yeah, man. Absolutely. Japan, UK, those are high on the priority list. We were talking with a couple people. Hopefully we can make something happen in the near future or the far future, either way. But honestly, we want to just experience this planet, man. You know, just like a lot of people didn't expect us to get as far as we've gotten just because of where my brother and I came up. And, you know, we come from that part of Detroit where the only way to get out is, you know, you got to play ball or be an entertainer or something like that. And, you know, it's so few and far between. So we're really blessed to be able to travel this country and the world. Like we're in Chicago right now. Actually, we're about to work in about an hour or so. And so we're just really blessed to be able to just go around and do what we do and have people accept us for our particular style.
One of the ways that professional wrestlers in this generation has really made a bulk of their income is through merchandising. A lot of wrestlers make far more in merchandising themselves than they do the actual wrestling on shows.
Mm-hmm.
What have you done as far as merchandising for your own self?
Yeah, actually, I started an apparel company. Like, I make my own shirts. So I make, it's called Backbreaker Apparel. We make T-shirts, rally towels, book bags, bandanas, pretty much anything, man. Like, you know, we make hats as well. So it got to the point where I was tired of paying other people to do something that I know I could do myself. And I just took the initiative with my friends and my brothers, and we just kind of they kind of put it in me to get going, and I ended up starting doing that. So I was able to work my own stuff, and I was able to help out a lot of other people as well. So and that really worked out.
One of the things that wrestlers have done for the last 35-plus years is use face paint in matches. We've seen dozens upon dozens of wrestlers from the national level, such as Ultimate Warrior, the Road Warriors, to current day like PCO, down to the independent level, use face paint. Some people are fans of face paint. Some people dislike working with guys that wear the face paint for various reasons. What are your views on face paint in professional wrestling?
Well, when I started, I used to use face paint. I did like a great value tomorrow. And it was taxing, but it was kind of cool just to be able to express yourself visually. The one thing that I would say is not everybody should use it because not everyone pays for the right product. You know, just the cheap stuff gets everywhere, and it's just not, you know, you're not going to have a good time. You spend a lot of money on our gear, and for somebody to bring their dollar store paint and get all over my gear, just, it's perplexing. So, you know, if you do it right, if you use the right stuff, acrylic, or if you're using I can't think of the other one. I think it's latex. Yeah, latex. Those work. But, you know, there's a lot of, like, you know, people using, like, dollar store finger paints and stuff like that. It's just not a good thing.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by, and I'm sure he has questions as well. So I'm going to pass things to him.
All right. Well, thank you, Sangay. Hello, Cassidy.
How's it going?
I'm glad that you made it on this time and you're not in Jamaica.
Yeah.
Also, I do approve of your trip to Jamaica. Yes.
Thanks.
I had a port of call in Jamaica, and we stopped in at Ocho Rios. Is that where you were?
Yeah. We were near Ocho Rios, probably like an hour away from it.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, that part of the Jamaica is kind of mountainous. Yes.
Yeah, we're right on the mountain. Like, if you went 20 feet too far ahead, you're definitely taking a tumble.
Well, now, if I'm not mistaken, that's the part of Jamaica where they have a 5,500 to 6,000 foot mountain, and they make Blue Mountain Jamaican coffee, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Wow. All right. Did you yourself, on your trip to Jamaica, have Blue Mountain coffee?
I did not. We were just, you know, first of all, it's really hot. So, you know, coffee, and when it's like almost 100 degrees, I don't know how people could do it. But, you know, it was definitely like we passed the factory and everything. So I thought that was really cool to see.
Oh, well, you could always drink iced coffee.
It's true.
Yes. Well, I guess if you lived in Jamaica for quite some time and you go up in altitude, a nice cup of hot coffee could be okay, because sometimes they get down into the low 40 degrees at high altitude.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes. Oh, okay. All right. Well, Cassidy, I saw your YouTube video entitled Cassidy Keith versus Robbie Keto, and this match took place under blue sky with a ring covered with blue apron, and there were a lot of telephone poles and a huge amount of wires. Do you recall if this was your only match with Mr. Robbie Keto?
No, we've had quite a few tussles, I guess you could say.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Cassidy, from the 42nd mark of the video that I watched till the time he was introduced by the ring announcer, Robbie Keto was laying on the top turnbuckle with his legs supported by the ring ropes.
Yeah.
It is my belief that he was trying to subliminally convey to you that he didn't have to take this match too seriously. I believe he wanted to convey the subliminal thought that he had won so many prior matches that this was just another dull day at the office. What he should have been doing is warming up fiercely so that his muscles would not be cold. You know, he should have had a sweat coming off his brow. Maybe in doing his warm-ups, perhaps jump-ups, squats, or push-ups, he would have instead conveyed to you that he held a viper-like intensity with a slight sadistical need to punish anyone that got in his pathway to success and victory. Do you agree that before the match, Robbie should have got his swole on?
Yeah. Well, anybody that knows Robbie Keto knows that he is a character. So You know, getting Rob in that mind frame is something that only a fist could do when it concerns Robbie. So, yeah, I tend to knock some sense into him every blue moon.
Wow. Now, to your knowledge, does Robbie Keaton have a tattoo on him, a tattoo?
I don't think so, actually.
Oh, okay. Do you yourself have a tattoo?
Yeah, I have like 14 or 15 at this point.
Okay. Wow. All right. Okay. Were you in any way inspired by the tattoos of Henry Rollins, lead singer of Black Flag? He's got a lot of ink going on.
Well, actually, you know, my tattoos are just, they're either really meaningful or they're really nerdy. Like, I have my right arm, I call it my nerd arm. I have like a really big Decepticon tattoo, and I have like a Slytherin snake from Harry Potter going in a figure eight. It's basically to convey everlasting greatness. I also have Pokemon on my arm. It's the Charmander evolution with my credo for life, I guess. It's survive, adapt, and evolve. And it's something that I try to live my life by.
Wow. Okay. All right. You say that one arm is reserved for kind of like the nerdy. Are you a big fan of Weird Al Yankovic?
I am, actually. I am.
Wow, okay. Have you ever considered using Weird Al Yankovic's Rolling White and Nerdy as part of your entrance music?
Not quite, but I did. I played that entire CD out when it came out. I was still in high school, and we played that CD until it went away.
Do you think that Rolling White and Nerdy would serve Robbie Keaton better with his entrance music?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, okay. A little bit better than the Wu-Tang Clan is what you're saying. Oh, okay.
Quite.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, now, speaking of Robbie Keaton, I was amazed that in the match that I saw with you, the ring announcer got through with his introduction, and not one person cheered or clapped for him. It was like a dead silence. You can't even hear one clap. My question is, should we at Turnbuckle Turmoil give Robbie Keaton the Indian name that literally means he who perches like a bird and receives deafening silence?
Oh, that's beautiful.
Oh, okay. I will try to look up the Kalitz Indian tribe out here in the Northwest and give a literal translation of that and see if we can apply that to Robbie Keaton. He who pushes like a bird and receives silence. Okay. Well, Cassidy, at the 3:25 mark, you hit Robbie with a right cross that put him down for a count of two. Did you take boxing lessons as a teenager?
You know, my brother boxed, and he did show me, you know, how to throw a proper punch and basically just how to move your weight behind your strike. So it gives it a little bit more of a comfort.
I believe if you want to deliver a proper punch, you've got to learn how to push off with your big toe. Am I right? Big toe.
Right, yeah. Your center of gravity, there's a lot that goes into it. A lot more than just swinging your arm, you know.
Oh, yes. Kind of windmill style. That doesn't go. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, did you yourself admire the boxes Roberto, Hands of Stone Duran, and Tommy the Hitman Hearns?
Well, actually, I did love Hearns, you know, just growing up in Detroit, you know, just there's such a rich boxing, you know, history, you know, and just I know a lot of guys that came up in gyms that he would frequent in Detroit, and it was pretty cool to Like, I never got to meet him or anything, but just, you know, like, I've through de facto met through a lot of guys who are.
I think, didn't he finish with an overall record of like 48-3-1?
Something like that. You know, me and numbers don't really mess unless we're talking math, then we're good. But records, I never remember anything.
Oh, okay. I will try to look up his record and send it to you. Yes, that'll be your homework assignment. Okay. Now, Cassidy, do you believe that in today's PC culture, he would be called Tommy the Hit Person Hearns?
I'm sure somewhere there will be some sort of protest for it, absolutely.
Okay. All right. Okay. Well, Cassidy, after you delivered a modified Stinger Splash to Robbie Keaton, I call it modified because you turned about 45 degrees and hit him with your side and shoulder, plus you were not quite airborne. But when you did this to him, you then followed up with a discus punch with your right arm. My question is, did you throw the discus for your track and field team in high school?
You know, I tried out for it, and I just did not have the time. I wanted to really bad. I just knew I'd be really good at it. Because I'm like, you know, just throwing, you know, why not? You know, but I was heavy into drama and musical things of the sort at the time. But did not, between that and wrestling, I should say, I did not have the time.
Wow. All right. Do you believe that your drama in high school helped you with your wrestling in any way, your drama classes?
Absolutely. Being able to speak and to project and to improv and be able to speak to an audience. And I learned a lot through my drama background that helps me to this day for wrestling.
Wow. All right. In your high school drama class, did you ever put on the play Midsummer Night's Dream?
I did not, but I did read it. I remember it.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, was one of, if you go back a couple of decades and you go on YouTube, is one of your favorite actors, comedic actors, Jack Tripper of Three's Company?
You know, I actually love the actor. Like, I think that he was really underrated as far as just what he brought to comedy. Like, he just, like, little things that he would do, people use to this day, you know.
Well, he was highly influenced by Lucille Ball. Huge influence on Jack. Lucille Ball.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. How do you think Jack Tripper would have done in a Hell in a Cell match against Robbie Keaton?
Well, I'll tell you this much. I guarantee that would be money. Like, just two. I think they might talk each other to death, to be honest. I think that'd be really funny to see.
Oh, all right. Okay. Well, Cassidy, we here at Turnbuckle Turmoil keep a logbook on the people that we interview, what their high school colors were and what their mascot was. At this time, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil listeners what your high school colors were?
Yeah, green and white.
Okay, green and white. Okay. Well, I'm just going to take a wild guess here. Was your mascot the Spartan?
It was not, but it was the Shamrock.
Ooh, the Shamrock. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Now, was this just a picture of a four-leaf clover, or did it have a drunk leprechaun with it, or what?
Yeah, just the clover.
Oh, okay. The clover. Okay, no drunk leprechaun. Okay, very good.
Not quite.
I was thinking of the wrestler Hornswoggle for some reason.
All right.
Okay. All right, very good. I'll mark that down in our logbook. Well, Cassidy, at the 5 minute and 47 mark, Robbie went for the pin attempt, but you threw him off bench press style. And he must have been thrown 1 foot in the air above your chest and 3 feet away. For the record, can you tell our Turnbuckle Turmoil audience how much reps you can do with a standard 135-pound bench weight or two plates on a bar?
135, I can usually do. I usually do my reps with 10. I could probably hit like a good 7 or 8. It's 135.
It's
not bad.
Oh, not bad. Not bad. Okay. All right. Were you a big fan of Mark Henry, who could bench press around 610 pounds or five plates on each side plus two 25-pound plates and two 10s?
Yeah, like I still have to this day. Like I think that you know, he definitely was one of my biggest influences just growing up in general. And, you know, being able to represent what a super heavyweight can do and be able to have the longevity that he did, I absolutely idolize Mark Henry.
Oh, okay, Mark Henry. Very good. Okay. All right. Well, Cassidy, you got the win against Robbie Keito in this video that I saw. After his leap from the second turnbuckle was grounded by your right hand to his jaw. The win came at the 6 minute and 50 second mark. Now, keeping in mind that the bell to start this match rang at the 2 minute and 5 second mark, and then he ran around the outside of the ring until the 3 minute and 5 second mark when he got back into the ring, and then he faced you and asked, "Does it look like I'm ready?" And then he finally made contact with your right fist at the 3 minute and 25 second mark. This match, according to my video analysis, only lasted 3 minutes and 25 seconds. Would you say that this was your most satisfying win in under 3.5 minutes?
Any time when I can punch Robbie Keito in the face is a satisfying moment. So I'll say absolutely.
Well, you seem to do that with quite regularity in that match.
Yeah. Yes. I tried. I definitely tried.
Well, Cassidy, what was the name of the company that was putting on the event in Jamaica?
It's CWE, Caribbean Wrestling Entertainment.
Caribbean Wrestling Entertainment. Okay. Did Carlito contact you before the match to be on Carlito's Cabana?
If only.
Looking back, if you could go in Stewie Griffin's time machine, would you rather be on Carlito's Cabana or Piper's Pit?
You know, I think that I would have a better time on the Cabana, but I think that more headlines would be made if I was on the pit.
Okay, on the pit. Okay, very good. All right. Have you yourself ever been asked to wrestle in a Scottish kilt?
No, but I wrestled in a, like, almost sort of like a loincloth, so sort of.
Oh, okay. All right, loincloth. Okay. Well, Cassidy, Sangai earlier mentioned WrestleMania 3. To your knowledge, was the tag team of Crime Time ever in a WrestleMania? Crime Time.
I know that they made an appearance. I don't believe they actually had a match. Yeah, I can't think. Maybe if they did, it might have been like a Fatal 4-Way type of situation, but I can't imagine. I can't picture them being in a 2-on-2.
Okay. All right. Well, Cassidy, WrestleMania featured or had in it the members of Right to Censor, and one of the members was Val Venus. Were you a huge fan of Right to Censor and Val Venus himself?
I was a huge fan of Val Venus, right to center. I was a kid, so obviously I hated it. But, you know, I appreciate them now as an adult because I think that it was very different as far as, you know, how characters were portrayed. This is an attitude era, you know, just like there was so much going on and so many different crazy characters. Being able to have, like, the characters to kind of rein them in was a genius idea. And Val Venus being the character that he was previously was perfect for the role.
Are you familiar with the video of Val Venus meeting Shelton Benjamin and Shelton Benjamin's mom backstage, and he shocks Shelton Benjamin's mom with what movies he's been in, like Saving Ryan's Privates?
Yeah, I do remember that.
Oh, that was funny, yes. Okay, yes. All right. Well, Cassidy, seeing how you're from Detroit, have you ever used Kiss's hit song Detroit Rock City as your entrance music?
I have not, and only because it's kind of like it's almost overdone, you know. When you have guys who are coming from the city, there's a finite number of entrance music that relay the city. So like what I did is I ended up by master mix the music that we use now, but we ended up putting like the rally cry from the Detroit Pistons. So like we have like right before the music starts, it's that really big Detroit. So I thought that was like a good homage to Star City.
Okay, all right. Well, Cassidy, I was saddened to learn that Mad Magazine is going out of circulation. Were you a big fan of Spy versus Spy?
Yeah, absolutely. I love the magazine. My mother was the vice president of the Detroit Public Library, so I used to get the magazines like as soon as they came out. Even though she didn't know I got them, but I got them through there. And between that and, you know, the TV show when I was growing up in the 90s, like, I loved it.
Did the thought ever cross your mind to have a Spy versus Spy match with Robbie Keito?
You know, when it concerns Rob, any way I could literally put my hands on that kid, I'm okay with. I'm definitely for it.
All right. Okay. Well, have you ever used a mint condition Mad magazine as a foreign object?
I have not.
Oh, okay. Well, in hindsight, that might be good because, you know, I think in a couple years, a mint condition Mad magazine will be worth quite a bit of money. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, you'd have to go with an alternative there. Okay. All right. Well, Cassidy, were you a big fan of Stone Cold Steve Austin, especially when he refused to tap to Bret Hart's sharpshooter?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Undertaker was my favorite personally, but I definitely loved just the antics that Austin used to put his boss through. It's kind of a running joke that my brother and I talk about that Stone Cold was the bad guy in the situation. You know, it's like, that's your boss. You're supposed to do what your boss tells you to do. So, beating up your boss makes you the bad guy. Sorry.
And I'm sure that's happened quite a bit in Detroit over the years. Yes.
Yeah.
Wow. All right. Okay. Well, at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy.
Thank you, QT. Well, Cassidy, pretty much everyone that wrestles has a few opponents on their list that they would most like to have a match with at some point in time. Are there opponents out there, be it internationally, be it domestically, or even just people in your area that you've not wrestled with, that you most want to step into the ring with in the future?
You know, I think my best answer for that is I want to test myself. So, every place has their quote-unquote best. I want to wrestle the best out of everywhere. You know, like, I want to wrestle the guys that, you know, that are local somewhere in the middle of nowhere that no one's ever heard of, but he's just waiting for, you know, that one good match. I want to wrestle that guy. I want to wrestle guys that have been all over, you know, like, I think a dream match of mine would be like someone like Samoa Joe. And I think that I want to test my style against pretty much anyone else who's willing.
And one of the other things that a lot of wrestlers have is that they have sometimes a set goal for promotions to hit as well. Is there any promotion out there, be it major national company or even just an independent somewhere, that has really caught your eye where you most want to set your goals to get to their company at some point?
We love HOG. We would definitely love to go out there, MLW. We did a trial for CZW, so hopefully we can actually make it out there in the future. But, you know, just honestly, like, we are, you know, we're road warriors, you know. We like to go out. Like, we live in Detroit, but we don't really wrestle in the city much. We try to travel as much as possible.
Now, for someone that might be listening today that's not overly familiar with you, could you describe what you would consider your usual style in the ring? How would you describe what you normally do during a match?
Well, you know, I like to consider myself, especially when I'm wrestling with Spirit of Detroit, is my brother's keeper. You know, I'm the guy that I'm going to make sure that my brother is taken care of when he does his crazy stuff. I'm there to, you know, knock some dudes on their heads. You know, I wouldn't consider myself a just straight super heavyweight style, but, like, I like to say that I'm a hybrid athlete that I can do pretty much whatever is needed.
You mentioned being in a tag team, and of course, you have that as well as a singles career.
Yeah.
Do you personally have a preference when it comes to tag team wrestling versus singles wrestling?
Yeah, absolutely. I love tag wrestling. Like, singles wrestling is near and dear to my heart, but I think tag wrestling is so cool because it's a group of people coming together and letting their ideas be played out in front of a crowd. I think that it's really cool.
Have you ever wrestled with a female partner before in mixed matches or intergender tag matches?
I have. Actually, only one. Nyla Rose and I from AEW.
Now, intergender wrestling has been sort of at the forefront of wrestling controversies for the last couple of years. Some people are very anti-intergender wrestling. Some people are for it, both within the industry and out of the industry. You'll find that. What do you think of intergender wrestling just as a basic rule?
You know, personally, I think that we're all trained the exact same way. I wouldn't feel uncomfortable being in the ring with a woman. I've wrestled a woman before. It's not anything, you know, overtly sexual or anything like that. It's just two competitors who are having a great match, you know, so it shouldn't matter what sexual orientation they are, man. Like, let's wrestle everybody. Why not?
One of the other more controversial aspects in wrestling lately has been the deathmatch wrestling. A lot of people feel that it is kind of an obsolete part of wrestling, doesn't really have a place. Other people are very much fans of that aspect of wrestling. What is your stance on the deathmatch wrestling?
You know, I think that wrestling in general, there's space for everybody. There's space for death matches. There's space for catch-as-catch-can comedy, you know, tag wrestling. There's space for everything, and I think that there's a time and place for it. So, you know, as opposed to, you know, what most people would say, I definitely believe that there is a place for deathmatch wrestling. I'm not one to do that, like I wouldn't do it, but I've definitely done, you know, like hardcore matches, things like that. But, you know, it's definitely has its niche.
One of the more popular styles of wrestling in the last couple of years has been the British style of wrestling. It's really picked up a lot of steam here in the United States. A lot of English wrestlers are coming over independently, and a lot of people from North America are now going to England and wrestling in the British independents. The WWE even has its own UK division. I know you said you wanted to get over to Great Britain at some point. It was one of the countries on your bucket list. But is that style of wrestling something that you particularly enjoy, or is it a case where you would try to do your own style once you got to Great Britain?
A little of both. You know, like I would, you know, I still have my style, but like I want to be able to adapt to any style. So, you know, it's almost like the Terminator, you know, it's like they are how they are until they learn and they adapt and they get even better. So that's kind of something that I like to mold myself around as well.
And we also have seen a huge increase in the fans of Japanese professional wrestling. New Japan, one of the hottest companies in the world, they are touring the United States this summer for the first time, independent of an American company co-promoting with them. What do you think it is that has attracted American wrestling fans to New Japan after 40 years of being in business, actually?
You know, I just think that strong style is something that people can really get behind because it just shows, you know, courage. It shows that adversity, there's a lot more than just punch, punch, punch. You know, it's like there's a story being told, and it's really captivating to see.
Well, we're down to the final few minutes of the show today, and I want to make sure you have ample time. So if there's anything you want to say to the listeners today, plug and promote absolutely anything and everything, social medias, upcoming appearances, merchandise, your favorite laundromat, anything in the world, floor is all yours.
Yeah, absolutely, man. So first of all, I just want to say thank you guys for having me. You know, thanks to the fans for listening. And, you know, you can always find me on Facebook. I'm on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all that stuff. You can look me up, Cassidy Keith, that's K-I-E-T-H. There's also my apparel company, Backbreaker Apparel. And you can hit me up on there as well. That's a Facebook page. We do more than just for wrestlers, so we can do it for anybody. Like if you got if you have like a girls' night out and you want to make some shirts for it, or you guys got some rally towels, you want to make some hats for your kids' recital, let's do it. Hit me up and we'll get you going.
Cassidy Keith, it has been a pleasure having you on the show today. I'm glad we were able to get you on here. And I want to wish you
Absolutely. Best
of luck with your career and with the apparel company.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, guys.
All right, fans, if you get the opportunity to check out Cassidy Keith, buy yourself a ticket, go support him and what he does. Very, very hardworking professional wrestler. He'll get out there and support. If there's some wrestling near you this week, get out there, watch his show. Be safe, and we will talk to you Sunday afternoon. The return of Karn Alexander to the program. It's going to be a great time with Karn, so we will talk to you Sunday.